Peraí.
Who is Grammy?
Good afternoon and welcome to the debut edition of the Smoke and Mirrors Show. I'm Rob Boyd and I'll be your host. My co-host Steve is running a little bit late. He'll be here shortly. So I'll just jump right into it and introduce you to our guest, Mr. Eddie Craig. He's here with us. How are you doing this afternoon, Eddie?
All right, Rob. How are you today?
Pretty good, pretty good. So I just wanted to go ahead and turn the floor over to you, and if you would, just give us a little background of how you started in the area of expertise that you've jumped into, and go from there.
After graduating high school, I spent 14 years in the United States Air Force learning how to read and comply with governmental regulations. And when I got out of that, I did some other work for a while, and then I went to work for the Nacogdoches County Sheriff's Department. While I was there, I got to learn a lot more about how the legal system and law in general works. And I wound up leaving that job because I was actually working for a bigger crook than anybody we had locked up. I learned a lot about what the law actually says and applies to versus how they're actually using it against the people in ways that personally I consider to be fraudulent, unconstitutional, abusive, and bordering on fraud and theft, if not actually fraud and theft, in so many ways that they're doing things. So I ran a computer business also for several years in my hometown of Nacogdoches, and I was attacked by the state of Texas, the comptroller's office, because I refused to work as an uncompensated tax collector on behalf of the state. I was not an incorporated business. I was a private one-man show. I did everything out of my own pocket, and the state wanted me to work for them as a tax collector for free, collecting and paying over sales tax. Well, I refused to charge and collect sales tax, so I was collaterally attacked by the state comptroller's office through various armed raids by law enforcement on completely skewed and false grounds, and so on and so forth. The more this occurred, the more angry I became about the way things were working. My first real experience predated even that when I helped my mother against the county tax assessor there in Nacogdoches, Texas, when they tried to steal her property for taxes she did not owe. And so the first thing I actually researched in Texas law was the property tax statutes that existed at the time. And I found several things in there that proved that they were committing fraud against the public through the use of the property taxes. And when I went after the county assessor for that, they withdrew the tax bill and they stopped sending her tax bills. So that's when I realized that actually learning what rules they're pretending to play by, you can become effective at using those as tools against them to get them out of the way and out of your life. Because once you understand what their limitations are, you begin to see exactly where they have stepped beyond those limitations. And so what I do now is I teach classes on legal due process. I teach classes on Texas law and how to use it in other states with that state's law, how to read statutes, how to understand what you're reading, and how to apply it. I basically teach you how to go to court and fight your cases without the aid of an attorney who isn't there to help you. He's just there to take your money. In a criminal case, it's even worse. A defense attorney is not there to protect you. He is there to protect the court and the prosecution. And by that, I mean that when you ask him, his mandate is very, very straightforward. His job is to make sure that you, as a defendant, have no appealable error upon which to seek any appeal if you lose your case and you wind up getting convicted. The whole system is rigged against we the people, and it has been for a very long time as far as the players. The law itself does what it's supposed to do, but the people that are in charge of using it, abuse it, apply it incorrectly, try to alter what it says to suit their own ends, et cetera, et cetera. And so I just got tired of it, and I decided it was time somebody needed to get knowledgeable enough about it to help the general public put a stop to this, to educate them, to inform them, to assist them. And so I've been doing that now for at least since 2010 here in Austin. And before that, when I was still running my computer shop, I would help people that I could fight traffic tickets and other abuses, such as the sales tax issues and things like that.
Right. That sounds good. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about, do you still do your class in Austin there?
I do. I teach a class in Austin down at Brave New Books. The class is every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. The first class is free, and it's $20 for each class thereafter, because I've got to pay bills and eat too, you know.
Right.
But if you happen to be an attorney or law enforcement, I know this isn't going to sound fair to the layman out there, but if you're an attorney or law enforcement, every class for you is free. Please come. Be my guest. Because just for once, I want you to step into a courtroom knowing how much you are lying about what you do and how much you have gone beyond anything you were ever taught that was proper.
Right.
Because you're being taught how to abuse these statutes in ways you're not even considering. You're just following orders. Pretty much the same defense they tried to use at Nuremberg and didn't work for them either.
Yep, I call them revenueers.
That's really all they are. They're not peace officers anymore. And when they say law enforcement, that translates into revenueer, because that's the only reason the law exists anymore, is to generate revenue for the state. It's not to protect the rights and property of the people.
Exactly. So, why don't you go ahead and give us the rundown on due process?
Well, due process is a series of ideas about what is fair to someone that's being accused of a crime or that has a justiciable issue with another party over an agreement or property damage or something of that nature. So, due process applies whether we're talking civil or criminal. The types of due process, however, vary depending upon which one you're in. You have rights available to you in a criminal proceeding that don't have any relevance to a civil proceeding, for instance. And then you have some that apply no matter which one you're in. The problem today for most people is that, one, they do not know and understand what their rights truly are. Two, they do not know and understand what binds the courts to respect those rights. Three, they do not know how to control the courts to get the due process they are entitled to. Now, one of the things that I deal with constantly is folks that I have created a term for, a couple of terms actually, it depends upon the degree of ineptitude they're displaying, but there are the patronuts and there are the patriots. And the patronettes are the ones that go off on these tangential legal theories for which they have absolutely no admissible evidence to use in a court. It's all theory, it's all based upon conjecture and presumption, and it's multi-levels of inference upon levels of inference. None of these things have a place in law, okay? In law, you're allowed one level of inference from a proven fact, and that inference must be logically sound in relation to that proven fact. The patronuts take arguments and information, they misread, they misconstrue, they take it out of context, they misrepresent what it says, and then they try to say this is the way it works, and it's not the way it works. The patridiots are the ones that have the same ideas as the patronuts, but then they go even beyond that, and they have absolutely no ability or desire to be shown whether or not they're right. They simply do not care. They want it their way. They're going to have it their way no matter how many times they get convicted, no matter how many times they get other people convicted. Their way is the right way even when it's not. So due process involves understanding what your rights are, what the rules that govern the courts and the system they use are, how to properly utilize those same tools against them to make them leave you alone, and how to use those rules to control that court and that judge as far as possible to get the ruling you deserve. And a lot of that has to do with what we refer to in the system here as making an appealable record. And an appealable record basically consists of appealable errors perpetrated by someone at some point in the proceedings. Now, there are lots of things they do in this system that are blatantly unconstitutional and unfair to the defense in so many ways, without any form of prejudicial opportunities for the prosecution. The system is designed to ensure the prosecution the greatest level of success possible, and the defendant the lowest level of success, especially if that defendant is what we refer to as a pro se or sui juris, someone that's going in by themselves without an attorney. The deck there is stacked against you immensely because judges have a tendency to refuse to listen to a pro se,
right?
Even if the pro se is right. But after going to so many court settings, and I've been to literally hundreds of them, and watching every single time how these things work. Yes, these judges are idiots. They're complete morons. They do not know their own rules. They do not know the law. They don't know anything. They're basically thrown into this. They went and got elected. They have the title, but they don't have the competence, and they never will get it. But at the same time, the pro se or sui juris litigant that's in there trying to defend themselves also does not know what they're doing 99.9% of the time. They raise issues that are not relevant. They go off on tangents that do not make a case for them one way or the other. They don't know how to make an appealable record of error. They don't know how to preserve the error. They don't know how to make sure the record reflects the error. They don't know any of them. Thus, when they go up on appeal, they've blown their case because they did not make a record that the appellate court could review to see who was right.
Right.
It really comes down to understanding how to make a legal argument and how to use their own rules and codes and procedures to make that argument foundationally sound and solid.
Exactly.
And that's what I teach people to do. Or at least I try to.
Okay, looks like Steve just rolled in. I'll be adding him in here shortly. Anything you want to just add or comment on?
Well, I do a radio show on Monday nights, every Monday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, Rule of Law Radio, Monday night show with Eddie Craig. And I help people with various legal issues on air. I usually spend the first segment or two sometimes just going off on some information I've come across and want to share with people. a legal process thought that someone needs to be aware of, so on and so forth, or some of the things that we've got in the hopper on what we're going to be doing in the future with the courts and so on. And we do take calls. We post the number. If you're on Facebook, I have an account there, Tao Law, T-A-O space L-A-U-W, is my personal page. And I have a legal discussion group, Tao of Law, T-A-O space O-F space L-A-W. And in those groups, we have a lot of these legal discussions on various issues, not just transportation and traffic. We deal with all kinds of things. Right now, I'm actually helping someone with a felony case. They've been charged with felony evasion, and so I'm helping them in their defense, because everything that the state's doing to make this charge is wrong. It's completely wrong.
Right.
And so I'm helping them out with that, and we've stymied them for a little while. We got both of the district judges that were presiding over this case, we got both of them completely disqualified for their activities behind the scenes. And they've appointed a new judge, which we don't know anything about yet, but hopefully they're getting the information they need for that. And we'll be seeing whether or not this is a judge we want to keep, because we can knock off the first assigned judge for any reason we want to, as far as getting them kicked off the case. But we want to, if we got a good judge, we want to keep him. But if we don't want him there. So right. We need to know as much information about that judge as possible before we let them carry on with anything else in this proceeding. But basically, everything they did through the grand jury indictment, so much of it was completely unconstitutional, completely in violation of state law, and completely in violation of the right of due process of the accused in these cases. And what is really disappointing and just so egregious about this is that the highest court on the criminal side in Texas, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, has literally sanctioned violations of state law by every prosecutor and court in this entire state. They have created a series of opinions on a particular section of law under Chapter 16 of the Code of Criminal Procedure regarding the right to an examining trial. They have nullified the legislatively mandated right to that examining trial by allowing the prosecution to seek an indictment in secret before the examining trial can be held. The problem is that the statute specifically prohibits that activity, and yet the court says go and do it anyway. And so if this person I'm helping winds up getting convicted of this felony evasion and we go up on appeal, the very first thing we're going to do is file a petition of no confidence in the entire panel of judges on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, because right. Every one of them has colluded in these opinions to violate state law and to basically legislate from the bench. Those are the judges you don't want sitting over your case, the ones who think they can do what they want whenever they want.
Yeah, they
and the Court of Criminal Appeals, yeah, they're egregiously guilty of this on more than one front.
Exactly. Like Steve is having some issues with his sound. He's trying to fix it right now. So, oh,
you can do it, Steve.
Yes, he can. So, the traffic code. Let's talk about how, at least in Texas and most of the states are similar, how it defines the driver's license and how it has what looks like a commercial section and then what's supposed to be assumed to be a non-commercial section, but it's really all commercial.
Yeah, well, actually, there is no such thing in the Transportation Code as a non-commercial section. Nothing in it even implies that it applies to non-commercial.
Exactly.
In fact, it's exactly the opposite. everything in the transportation code, including the subject matter of the bill and the title of the code itself, tells you what it is. It is a code to regulate commercial use of the highways and people who are engaging in that business or business-related activity. That's it. It has nothing to do with the general public. The state, the municipalities and counties included, have used this code to defraud the people of Texas of literally billions of dollars through misapplication of this code to the general public. They get it out of you through traffic fines, court costs, licensing fees, registration fees, and every other form of tax they can think of that would be completely unconstitutional if they tried to use it as a tax, which is what a license actually is, according to the United States Supreme Court. A license is a tax upon an activity or occupation. That's what it's for.
Right.
Since we have the right to locomotion, according to the United States Supreme Court, and have always had the right to locomotion, that right is inherent in our ability to go back and forth between the states in whatever means of conveyance is available to us in the day, just like our forefathers. What most people don't understand about American law is, and English law in general, which is where our law comes from, is that custom and practice make the law. Now, through the entire English history, the practice and custom of the people is to move about the land as they desire or are able to do.
Right.
Now, they could do it on foot. They could do it on horseback. They could do it on mule. They could do it in a wagon. They could do it in a cart. They could do it in a chariot. They could do it in one of the, what they used to call the schooners of the plains, one of those great big family wagons you used to see in the covered wagon movies.
Right.
Okay. It didn't matter. They had the free option to choose if whatever method they could best afford and utilize to make their progress from one place to another. That is practice and custom. That does not change based upon the advancement of technology. If it did, then every argument against the Second Amendment would be true. It only applied to muskets, not to modern guns, right? If technology is the threshold that changes practice and custom into a privilege, then we lost the privilege to keep and bear arms the moment we moved off black powder and muskets. But we didn't. And the courts have told you time and time again, we didn't. The advancement of technology does not alter the exercise ability of the right. How then can our right to locomotion, through any means available to us through the day, be destroyed and converted into a state-licensed privilege simply because of the advancement of technology in the method of locomotion? See, you'd have to go back and study the history of all the laws relating to automobiles and motor vehicles and so on and so forth to understand how we got to where we are.
Right.
In almost every instance, the state always tries to do its regulatory activities based upon the police power, which is based upon public safety, okay, and the government's requirement to ensure the public safety. The problem is when the government tries to do a minority report event and prevent something bad from happening before it's actually happened. That's when they've gone way beyond any authority they were given. Now, there are certain things that have such a high degree of probability that that's not always a bad thing. For instance, let's say you want to set up your fireworks stand 10 yards from a fuel storage depot, but you also want to give fireworks demonstrations outside. Not a good combination by any stretch of the imagination. Okay? Building campfires in the living room of your house, and your house is not a teepee. Or an igloo. Not a good thing.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Okay. So those kinds of things where you can see where the immediate result, or at least the immediate result has such a high potential of occurring that it would be foolish to even attempt it. Those are the kinds of preventative malum prohibitum laws the state is allowed to make, not ones that control our every breath and action, which is what they're doing. They want to say that you have to have a license so that the public is safe from you because that license proves your competency. Well, let's analyze that argument by the state here for just a moment. Rob, who taught you how to actually get behind the wheel and control a car? Who actually taught you?
I guess I learned from my brother.
Okay, your brother. So your brother was a state employee?
No.
Your brother then was certified by the state as an expert in motor vehicle operation and was certified as an instructor to teach you how to do it?
Nope.
Okay. Did he at least tell you what to read?
Yeah, we got the little handbook.
Which basically tells you what? The rules of the road, right?
The rules of the road, yeah.
But nothing about how to control the car?
No.
Okay. So you actually read the information you needed from a book with no instruction whatsoever to learn what you needed to learn to go take the test to get the license.
Well, I actually...
And then you also practiced in the car with him, I presume.
Right. I think I took a driver's ed class at some point along there.
Okay. And who taught the driver's ed class?
Some instructor.
Some instructor who worked for who?
For the school.
Was the school a state agency?
I assume it is.
It's not. Or there is no driver's ed school in the entire state of Texas that is a state agency or entity. Not one.
Okay. I don't remember. This
They're
is back in the
70s. They're all private. Every single one of them is private. In high school, okay. It was my gym teacher.
Yeah. Okay?
My gym teacher is the one that gave me driver's ed.
Okay. Something similar to that.
He's not certified by the state to teach that course. He is not taught or licensed by the state to teach that course. He just simply knows how to do it. In other words, it's knowledge transference, just right. Like we have always learned everything we do without a state license. Where exactly. Then does the license come into play? The license comes into play when you get into the activity of using a car or other conveyance as a motor vehicle, so as to use the public highways as a place of business. And what I mean by that is transportation.
Let me
transportation,
stop you, right?
By definition, is the movement of persons, goods, or property from point A to point B by a carrier. The definition of a carrier is someone who is engaged in the business of transporting persons, goods, or property for compensation or hire. Okay? That is not the general public. That is not you and me. The license is there for two things in relation to carriers and those engaging in business-related activity associated with transportation. One, commercial drivers are the only drivers that must have training sanctioned and certified by the state. They're the only ones. Okay. Two, they are the only ones that are using the roads as a place of business. Now, those roads belong to the people to use for their private purposes. Therefore, to use them as a place of business is to use them for an extraordinary purpose. The privilege of that extraordinary use is the fee that you pay in the form of the license. That's all it's ever been. It is permission to a license. A legal definition is permission to do that which would otherwise be illegal without the license. Now, if the practice and custom of the people through law is the ability to move from place to place by the means of whatever conveyance is available in the day, then a license cannot take that right of the people and convert it into a privilege and sell it back to them for a fee. Can't do it. The courts have already said they can't do it.
Exactly. Let me stop you right there and add Steve in real quick. He's ready All to right. go. So I will do that right now. As soon as I find him on here. Okay. He's not online properly. Let me, why don't you go ahead and keep going?
Okay.
The major
difference in that is the fact that it's the extraordinary use that denotes the basis for the license. That and the requirement that extraordinary use cannot represent a danger to the public. Hence, they can license them as being certified as being capable of operating those 80,000-pound-plus guided missiles that are trucks. Buses that are carrying large numbers of people, et cetera, et cetera. These people are getting paid to either move the property or the goods or the people from point A to point B. That's their job. And their job is taking place on the highway. Because of that, the license is there to make sure that those people are competent to handle that responsibility and to be safe around the public while they engage in their business. Same is true of taxi drivers, shuttle bus drivers, you name it. If you're getting paid to use the road as a place of business, then you're the one that's required to have the license. You're the one that transportation applies to. It is not the rest of us. Never has been. A perfect example of this is 99.9% of the citations in Texas are based upon speeding. They always use speeding as an allegation to raise money and to do a pretextual stop. Okay?
An excuse
that
to pull
or
you over.
A brake light. Again?
An excuse to pull you over.
Exactly. The problem is when you actually read the speeding statute, you find out just how big a fraud they're actually perpetrating. They tell you that they're charging you with speeding under chapters 5 or sections 545.351 or and 352 of the Texas Transportation Code. Okay? But what they fail to do is state in the complaint against you all of the necessary elements required to prove the allegation of speeding, which has a problem all of its own in that there is no such offense in Texas law anywhere. Doesn't exist. There is no such thing in the Texas law as a speeding charge. None. Now, there are two other statutes that you have to take in paramateria with the information in 545.351 and 352. That is section 201.904 of the Transportation Code and section 1.03 of the Penal Code. Section 1.03 of the Penal Code tells us that it tells us two things. One, that those provisions in the penal code apply to all other law in the state of Texas, except for a very few minute exceptions, and those exceptions do not apply in what we're about to talk about, okay? So those provisions under the penal code apply to every code in Texas. That's first thing. Second thing is the penal code says very clearly in those sections that there is no offense someone can be charged with if the statute does not specifically define it as an offense. Well, guess what? The Transportation Code does not specifically define speeding as an offense. Nowhere in any of the statutes relating to so-called speeding does the term offense appear, violation appear, or misdemeanor appear. Nothing.
Right.
There is nothing telling us it's criminal. There is nothing that's telling us it's what level of criminality is associated with it. Nothing. Okay? It's not defined as a crime whatsoever. The second thing is, or third thing, when we get to 201.904 and we see what the statute, the Transportation Code itself, says the purpose of those posted speed limit signs is, we get our first clue of the fraud. 201.904 basically states the department, and in this case, department is defined as the Department of Transportation of the state of Texas. The department shall have the authority to post signs on the highways of this state regulating the speed of. Now, this is important. Regulating the speed of. And then it tells us what it who is regulated by that sign. Very first thing listed, commercial vehicles, commercial motor vehicles. Okay? Second thing listed, semis. Third thing listed, semi-tractors. Fourth thing listed, semi-trailers. Fifth thing listed, commercial motor vehicles transporting passengers for compensation or hire, and in parentheses, buses.
Right.
Okay? So right there in 201.904, you see that every posted speed sign on every highway of the state of Texas only applies to regulating the speed of a commercial vehicle. Nothing else. Nothing else.
Okay, let me try to add Steve in again real quick. Steve. It all failed. Don't know why it's failing. Try it again. Well, now it's not even showing him.
That could be problematic.
Hello. Okay, there he is. It's just going straight to failure. So, continue.
Okay, where was it with this? Okay. So, in relation to the commercial motor vehicles and speeding, the reason it doesn't apply to the people is because the people can be charged under the penal code for something different, and that is criminal negligence. See, the idea here being that even though you're not bound by the transportation code, you're bound by common sense and the rights of others to behave properly in the car. So while you may can go faster than the posted speed limit in whatever area you're in, that does not alleviate your responsibility and duty to exercise due care so as not to harm other people or their property. Now, this is where most status naysayers say, you're wrong. Everybody can go as fast as they want, blah, blah, blah. A 10-year-old can take mom and dad's car out and go for a joyride. Nobody can do anything about it. No, that's a completely red herring argument. Not true in either case.
Right.
First and foremost, if you are going faster than the posted speed limit and you cause an injury, what makes you think that the injury is automatically greater because of the speed versus, you know, going slower? For instance, the United States Supreme Court, way back at the onset of the implementation of automobiles, had a ruling on set speed limits in states. That is why every single state of the union has prima facie speed limits rather than static speed limits. And the reason for that is as follows. The Supreme Court said that an automobile is capable of killing regardless of the speed. It is just as potentially deadly at 1 mile an hour as it is at 100. And under certain conditions, that's absolutely true. Okay, so the movement speed, while a contributing factor to the level of damage, most certainly in some cases, is not a factor that would otherwise have prevented the damage. You understand that argument? You would have caused damage at 1 mile an hour or 100 miles an hour. Wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
So telling somebody that they can only go 50 miles an hour, so only half the damage occurs, is something the state's not allowed to do.
Okay.
Because the state has no way of gauging for any purpose the level of damage in any particular situation. Okay? But the responsibility of the individual to exercise due care exists regardless of the state because of the equal rights of all people to be free from such intrusions upon their rights and their exercise of their rights. Okay? So you could be charged under the statute if you caused an injury while you were speeding, because the reason you caused the injury was your failure to control your automobile due to the speed. You could be charged with criminal negligence. Yeah, it's a much harsher penalty, but it's also the common law penalty for throwing your duty to use due care out the window. So if you're doing 85 on a little residential street in a school zone and you hit a kid, you have no defense, in my opinion, for against criminal negligence. None. You had the duty to exercise due care to ensure that your use of your automobile was not going to cause an injury to someone else, or that you were using it in a way that prevented you from being able to not cause that injury. That's negligence. But it was a whole lot easier for the state to steal money if they made it where it wasn't so punitive. And so they put it into the code and called it speeding. But again, 201.904 shows this only applies to commercial motor vehicles. Well, 545.351 also proves my point about the damage. What they never put into the complaint are the following elements. One, they never put in the complaint against you that you were engaged in transportation at the time of the alleged offense, which is a required element. Why? Because the charge itself exists only within the subject matter of transportation. Right. If you're not engaged in transportation, you cannot commit an offense under that code, period. Because the only subject matter being regulated is transportation. So anything that is beneath that subject matter in that code is directly relevant to that code, or it's unconstitutional as being a different subject than the one the legislation told the public it was enacting. And that's a violation of the Texas Constitution. Because every bill under Article 3, Section 35 must have a subject, and nothing in that bill can deviate from that subject. And it can only have one, cannot have many. It can have many objects under the subject, but it can only have one subject. And the entire code, the subject is transportation. So a speeding offense would only be an offense to someone who's engaged in transportation. 201.904 tells us that, because only those things listed are engaging in transportation or are capable of it. Then you get to the issue of 351, or 545.351, where it gives you the specific elements that they associate with a speeding charge. Traveling this speed in an area posted at this speed while operating a motor vehicle and blah, blah, blah. Well, there's multiple problems here. First off, what facts and evidence exist to prove that you're an operator? There is none. Unless, of course, you gave the officer your license at the time, because the license is only required to be produced and used by an operator, right?
Right.
So the operator producing the license is admitting that they're an operator.
Exactly.
But let's say you didn't have the license. They have no actual evidence that you're an operator. They're simply presuming it based upon a false misinterpretation of the code and based upon something they are forbidden to do in the right of due process. Unrebuttable legal presumptions. If they do not state in the complaint against you that you were engaging in transportation, they are presuming that element of the offense to automatically be true. That makes your right to the presumption of innocence null and void. You are required to be assumed innocent of every element of the offense, not just some of them. Every single one of them. And any presupposition to the contrary is a violation of due process. By failing to state transportation as an element, as they are required to do, they are legally presuming that it is an element, and you are not being given any opportunity to rebut that element because they're not making any allegation that it exists. The other elements there are also the fact that you must fail to have exercised your due diligence and your duty to use due care, just like I described. and your failure must have resulted in a collision with another person or vehicle already lawfully upon or entering the highway. In other words, you had to have caused property damage to someone else on the road. Notice the statute doesn't say a darn thing about anything off the road. You can go shooting off the road through a fence and hit a telephone pole, and they can't charge you with speeding under the statute because it only applies if you collide with another person or vehicle that is on that roadway or entering that roadway. That's the limitation of the statute.
Right.
None of these elements are ever asserted in the criminal complaint. None of them. None of them are ever proven at trial, which means the state is perpetrating fraud and depriving you of your right to due process every single time. Not just every once in a while, every single time. They have defrauded the people of Texas out of billions upon billions of dollars. In fact, to the tune of $9 billion a year, they're defrauding the Texas public and every visitor to the state we've got that gets a ticket.
Yep. And it's ongoing.
It is. And we get into the other issues like driving while license invalid, failure to display a license. Who's required to display it? Who's required to have it? It's the commercial drivers. It is not the general public. So when they're charging a member of the general public with this offense of having no license or failure to display a license, the officer is perpetrating fraud, and he's doing it knowingly, and he cannot be presumed to be doing otherwise. Why? Because in his official capacity, he has an obligation and duty to know the law and to properly apply it. He is not, which means his training is deficient, which means his desire to understand how to do his job is deficient. He will do his job based upon what he's told rather than what the law is. This is a system we can do without people. What was that?
They're following policy instead of the law.
Not even policy. They're simply following whatever dictate comes out of the mouth of some superior. That's it.
Yeah.
Because the superior does not know the law any better than they do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really ridiculous how incompetent our public servants are. And how bad it is that we allow them to remain that way.
Exactly. Mass ignorance.
And we've got plenty of that.
Well, I've tried to add Steve in here several times, and it just keeps failing. I don't know why. I can't add him to the call. This immediately fails. I don't know what's going on with that.
Well, that could be a problem.
So, we got another hour to fill.
It says he is either isn't online or his Skype is not up to date.
Yeah, he's on a Linux version of Skype, too.
Yeah.
That may be it is.
Yeah, well, the biggest problem there, of course, is unlike the original Skype where you could use the older versions with the newer versions, ever since Microsoft took it over, they're forcing you, just like they do with Windows, to take the updates to it or it won't work.
Right. Well, I just installed it on his system last weekend, so it should have been the latest version. I don't know. Unless they came out with a new version in the last week. I don't know. I've tried several times.
What do you want the rest of this hour? The rest of this hour.
You have the floor. What do you want to talk about?
Well, it seems we've got a lot of people up here in the chat asking about lots of things. What about insurance? Everything you're asking about falls within the realm of the transportation code. Mandatory financial responsibility falls under Chapter 601 of the Texas Transportation Code, the Transportation Code. The only people that are mandatorily required to have insurance, once again, are commercial drivers and operators on the highways. They're the ones that are subject See, the thing is what most people don't understand about the intent of the various transportation acts in Texas is that they are remedial statutes. In other words, they were put in place to provide remedy for damages. Okay?
Right.
It tells you that right in the legislation that it is a remedial statute. So the purpose of this is to give the general public a way to go after a commercial driver who causes them some harm. That's what these codes are for, to protect the public from those that the code regulates if they do something wrong. Otherwise, you would have to go into law and have all these legal issues settled about what they can do and what they can't do, because attorneys love to draw out stuff like that. Here you have a statute that says a commercial driver can't do these things. And if they cause you injury while they're doing something they're not supposed to do, this is what you use to show that and get your remedy. That's what it's for. So as far as the mandatory insurance goes, commercial drivers, period. Now, I saw something up here. Somebody's talking about try driving away after they pulled you over. Not once so far have you heard me say anything about drive away even if they pull you over. Never said that. Never said that. Okay? If you want to get shot, you've got a death wish, that would be the thing to do. So don't do it. Okay? But you got to remember one thing here. You are isolated on the side of that highway with a man with a serious steroid issue and an attitude problem and an infant mentality as to how his authority works. All right? He thinks all he has to do is cry and somebody's going to give him what he wants. And today that somebody is you. So, we do not fight these battles on the side of the road with the cop. Do not do that. That is a mistake. Number one, the more you talk, the worse you make it for yourself. Period. No ifs, no ands, no buts. That's exactly why I made a script for people to learn from about what to say and do at a traffic stop. And why. And if you want to get the script, you can get that and a practice script for going to court. And it is just a practice script. But the scripts you can get at www.logosradionetwork.com/TAO. Tango Alpha Omega. Okay? In the transportation script, it tells you the various things to say and do and explains to you why you do them. The thing you need to understand about that script is it's not based upon my theory of how this works. Even as an ex-deputy sheriff, it's not based upon my theory. Everything in that script is based upon United States Supreme Court case law. Everything that I tell you to do in that script. Okay?
Right.
So don't argue with the cop on the side of the road. There is a famous quote by Napoleon, and I use it all the time in teaching my class and in teaching people what not to do in these cases. And the quote is by Napoleon, and it goes like this. Never interrupt your enemy while he is busy making mistakes.
Yep.
Okay? This cop is making a ton of mistakes. We know this, or at least we should. But we're going to let him go on making them. And we're going to be sitting right there making our appealable error record the whole time. Okay? The whole time. This is one of the reasons why I tell people, do not ever, ever walk out your front door for the rest of your natural born life without a recording device. Multiple recording devices if possible. If you even think of interacting with a public servant or someone where the interaction could turn adverse, turn that recorder on. Texas is a one-party state. Only one person involved in any conversation has to know it's being recorded. No one else does. But I'll tell you what, those cops are recording you. You better be darn sure you're recording them. Okay? Because they will doctor their record, and we've proven that number of times that they will doctor their record to get their way. And the only adverse effect on that is what you've got in the form of your own recording that shows it's a lie. Okay?
Yep.
So always take something with you that records, even if it's just audio. Video is much more preferable. Get you a camera for your car. I rigged up a set of GoPros in a friend of mine's car where we angled it. These GoPros are excellent wide-angle cameras. We could cover everything from the front tires of her car all the way around to the back. We can't see directly in front, but she can get a camera that mounts on the rear view for that. But the point of it is that we can see, since most pullovers occur from the rear, we can see everything going on by everyone from the front tires of her car all the way back. And they have helped us numerous times. She gets pulled over a lot because she's got a very heavy foot. But when she gets pulled over, she normally is calling me immediately to tell me she's getting pulled over and needs to know what to say or do. And I've already told her a dozen times, but be that as it may. Now, one of the things they love to try to do on these stops when you're not being cooperative, in other words, you're not waiving your rights to provide them with information they can use against you, which you have every right to not do, including a license and registration and all that other stuff. Yes, they're going to write you tickets for it. No question. But the very first thing out of your mouth after you tell the officer, "Officer, for the record, I am not engaging in any form of transportation or other commercial use of the highways. Do you acknowledge you've been so informed?" That's going to be in his recording. That's going to be in your recording. "I'm not engaging in transportation, moron." You're just not saying it that way. Okay?
Right.
You're making a record for appeal. Now, when they start demanding these documents, "Officer, I'm not an attorney, but if I produce any of this information you're demanding, can you potentially use it against me or to potentially incriminate me in some way in a court of law?" And the answer to that is always yes.
Of course.
Yes. You produce a license. Let's say your birthday was yesterday. Is your license expired today if it's past the year? Absolutely. Can he write you a ticket for that? Absolutely. How about your insurance card? You got an insurance card. It's valid, but the one you have in the car happens to belong to a different car you've got at home instead of the one it's in. Oh, my mistake. Oh, well, I'm going to write you a ticket anyway. So he wrote you a ticket for no insurance because you didn't have the insurance card he demanded. Or because you gave him one that was the wrong card. You see what I'm getting at here? They're going to charge you however they want to charge you regardless.
Right.
Do not fight this battle on the side of the road. The one thing about being out there is you're all alone. The cop is not. He's got a radio, a gun, a nightstick, handcuffs, taser, and pepper spray, and the ability to call dozens of similarly equipped individuals.
Right.
You don't. Okay? So don't do that.
No. Direct confrontation.
But you make this record, you ask these questions that are in the script, and now you've got something that you can use against the cop in a court of law. Okay?
Right.
And that's the key to this. Don't try handing them a handful of documents. They won't take them. They're being trained not to take any paperwork that is not exactly what they asked for. Because they know that the circumstances of them putting their hands on something they didn't want that you might be able to introduce in court later is too high.
Yeah.
Because anything that occurs at that stop, if you know how to do it properly, can be used as admissible evidence in the trial or any of the other hearings. But in relation to all of this, the key is to never wind up having to go to trial. But in order to do that, you have to understand how this works, and you have to understand the legal arguments associated with it. And one of the patronut arguments is the right to travel. That is not the correct argument, has never been the correct argument, will never be the correct argument. No one is charging you with a violation of a legal duty associated with the right to travel, are they? No.
No.
They're charging you with a violation of a legal duty associated with engaging in transportation. So what is the proper rebuttal? Not engaged in transportation. It has nothing to do with the right to travel. Absolutely nothing. Okay? Now, you can bring up those issues when you sue the cop and you sue the judge for maliciously prosecuting you under a code that never applied to you in the hopes that they could steal revenue from you while they hindered you at your liberty and held you illegally for whatever purpose, including if the officer actually physically arrests you and takes you to a jail cell. In Texas, that is called false imprisonment. Every single cop that has ever gotten sued for false imprisonment because of their failure to take a person they've arrested directly before a magistrate rather than directly to a jail cell has lost that suit. Every single one. And you know why? Because he violated the law. 543.002 of the Transportation Code tells any officer that if he arrests you for some offense in that code, then upon your demand or your refusal to sign the citation or his determination to arrest you for some arrestable offense, his duty under the law is to take you directly to the nearest magistrate. They don't do it. They take you directly to a jail cell. Instead of sitting there bitching, moaning, and complaining about having to go to jail, think about the new boat you're going to buy because of this guy's stupidity. Think about the next 10 mortgage payments you're going to get paid for free by the state and the police department. Because this guy is legally liable for what he just did. But you have to know that. And you have to go after him to make him pay for it. Because they certainly aren't going to do it for you. And they're certainly not going to admit it without a fight. But if you file that suit, they will lose. What's that?
I said no lawyer is going to do it for you either. You have to know what you're doing yourself.
Lawyers do not understand these arguments. They don't care. Because what you're doing when you tell them these arguments and you show them the proof in the statute is you're proving that their $100,000 education is worthless.
Right.
Because you, someone who got it out of a book, now know more about the actual law than that damned attorney.
Yeah.
Okay? You just blew his $100,000 legal education right out of the water and sank his battleship. He cannot have that. Cannot have that.
You hurt my ego.
What was that, Rob?
I said, you hurt my ego.
Yeah. There's a movie that Judd Nelson stars in. It's called From the Hip. He's playing an attorney who just graduated law school and wants to litigate cases in his first year as an intern at a law firm. And, of course, he arranges this in a way where he can do it. It's kind of a comedy, but it's also kind of a drama. But in that movie, he's trying to tell his girlfriend what it is that he does and did to get where he could become a trial attorney. And they're talking about the justice system and the client that he has that's been charged with murder. And the girlfriend looks at him and says, yeah, with all the faith and justice in our legal system, you may as well just play spin the bottle. And he's like, oh, you just invalidated my whole existence. When you show a statute to an attorney who has never read it, and you show that you understand it better than he does, you've done exactly the same thing to him. You've proven that that education didn't help them one bit.
Right.
Here's the situation when it comes to attorneys. Attorneys are not taught law. They are taught somebody else's opinion about the law. Period. They are taught case precedents by this court, this state, and so on and so forth. But they never sit down and read the actual law that these cases applied to.
No, they have
proof of that is the fact that they continue to use 30-year-old opinions on the same law that has changed 10 times since that opinion was written. They still use that opinion as the authority over that particular section of law, even though it is no longer applicable because that section of law has changed.
Yeah, they're like Christians. They pick and choose the passages they want to back up the story they're trying to tell.
Well, they're not the only religion that does that.
Well, yeah, all religions are like that.
As long as we're on the issue of picking and choosing, that's the difference between me and most of the people on the planet today. I pick and choose what I'm willing to do and when I'm willing to do it. I don't care who's telling me.
Right.
As long as I'm not causing harm to someone else by my action or inaction, when I have a duty to act, let's say, then nobody has the right to tell me what to do. Nobody.
Now, exactly.
If I'm sitting here thumping you in the chest with my knuckles and you don't want me to do that, you have the right to tell me to stop. If I insist on doing it anyway, you have the right to push me away. And if I come back and push you back and start it again, you have the right to defend yourself and make me stop if you're capable of doing so. Period. That is the only law that applies to the people of this country in any state, no matter what they want to tell you. We have the duty not to harm our fellow man or the exercise of their rights or their property, or the use of their rights or their property. We have no fundamental right to impede that, provided their use and exercise does not do any of that to us or to someone else. Period.
Right.
If we live together in harmony and do those things, we're good.
Exactly.
If not, the state is there to ensure that someone who causes harm and is of greater strength than someone else is able to get remedy for that injury. That's what the state was created to do in relation to the people. Not to rule over us, not to dictate to us, not to tell us what we can and cannot do. They are there to provide us with the strength to get remedy from a stronger opponent who has caused us harm, or to provide us an avenue to go to get remedy for those who cause us harm, whether they're stronger than us or not.
Right.
That's all government was intended to do in relation to the people.
But it never ends up that way.
No, it doesn't. And the reason it doesn't is multifaceted. But the biggest part about it is, and I know there are people out there that are going to hear this and think I'm talking about them. And if you think I'm talking about you, you're probably right. Otherwise, you wouldn't have any reason to take offense to it, right? But the problem is most people are sheep. They have no clue and no desire to fight back because it interferes with what they want to do. Well, let me give you something I learned very early in my childhood. To a child, play is anything they want to do. Work is anything they have to do. Guess what, folks? In relation to your rights, understanding the law, and controlling your public servants and what they do to us, you need to grow up. You need to learn that there is work involved in that, not play, work. Because without that work, they do what they're doing now. They run amok like wild children with no control and no guidance. And you wonder why when you come home, there's food on your walls, your carpet's been set on fire, and little Jimmy's swinging from the chandelier, holding the dog by his tail, whooping it up at the top of his lungs.
No doubt.
Okay? That's where your public servants have gotten to, people, and it's your fault. It's your fault, not theirs. They are completely unguided, undisciplined, unmanaged, unruly children. And you're the one letting them get away with it. Period.
Yeah, we are.
They only understand one paddle, money. You take away their ability to make money. You take away their ability to keep their money. Things will change. But the only way you're going to do that is to go after them. You can't just sit by and hope somebody else fixes it. But what are you going to do? You know, this is not something any small handful of people alone can fight. Because even if they win in their little small area of the state and they wind up getting themselves left alone, how does that benefit the rest of the people? It doesn't. Everybody has to learn to fight these things in an individual way. As an individual or as a small group, rather than us becoming knowledgeable and working together to change it.
Yeah.
See, there's one thing in our system of justice that the crooks can't yet control. The juries. Now, they can misinform the jury. They can manipulate them with information, but they are not in control of them.
Right.
And so by educating ourselves on the limitation of the law and the limitation of the authority of our public servants and what they can and cannot use that law to do, a jury can nullify any conviction they're trying to get against somebody and thus nullify the law, period.
Speaking of
which, if you get hearings all over the state nullifying every transportation citation because the state never proved transportation existed, guess what? They're going to have to change tactics.
Right.
They're going to have to come up with something better.
I think New Hampshire just came out, passed a law saying that they have to inform the juries now that they have the right to nullify.
Right, and
so
that's just it.
There's some good news.
We have always had that right. But the
we have it.
The United States Supreme Court ruled that the state courts could lie to the people about what the powers of a jury actually are. They could lie.
Right.
Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm being led by a group of people who make a rule that says they can lie to us to do something that would be unlawful to us, I got a problem with that. A big problem.
Yep.
And that's somebody that I need to see decorating a tree limb in my front yard. Okay? Or their front yard. Or a lamppost down the street. I don't care.
Or in
but
the
that's
town
what
square.
Needs to be done. Because yeah. that's somebody that should not be in charge of other people by any means. But how many of you turned a blind eye to those types of laws and those types of court opinions saying that, yes, they can do it? The United States Supreme Court. Cops can lie to the public. The United States Supreme Court. Politicians can lie to the public. The United States Supreme Court. It's not against the law for corporations to buy our government and thus prevent government buy for and with the consent of the people. Those are all Supreme Court rulings, people.
Yep.
Do you not understand that? That is your petulant children rewriting the rules of the household to suit themselves. Now, let me give you a straight-up example of how this would work in your house. Let's say that you, your wife, and your five kids are your own little state, okay? There's no one that can rule over you. You're sovereign within your house. Now, you all agree that you will rule by consent as parents. So you write a constitution. The constitution says, okay, the children must do these chores, the parents must do these chores, the parents must supply them with education, clothes, food, a roof over their heads, blah, 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 and the children will get an allowance for all the things they do, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. And then, after you get this signed and put into action, and remember that the purpose of this is for mom and dad to be able to govern the children, you promptly turn around and tell the children that they are the only ones that have any say-so in how the Constitution gets applied and what it means. Where do you think that's going to go?
Nowhere fast.
You think that the kid will not be back on the chandelier tomorrow swinging the dog by the tail when he has the ability to interpret that family Constitution as meaning he has the right to do what he wants even though it specifically says he can't? Because he interpreted it that way?
Right.
Or he comes up with this idiotic excuse, it's a compelling playtime interest. That's what the courts do. It's a compelling government interest.
Right.
So that's what your child is doing. It's a compelling playtime interest. I enjoy and like swinging from the chandelier upside down while holding the dog by his tail and listening to him scream about it. It's a compelling plaything interest.
So at what point do we just declare the whole thing illegitimate and throw it all out with the trash?
Well, that's the question of the day, isn't it? And yeah. The other question of the day is what remedy would be required to make it a reality? Should we even actually stand up and do that? If you think these people are going to go peacefully after all the power they've seized and all the money they've accrued doing what they're doing, you better think again. If that was not the case, every time there was a local gathering of people that were just railing against everything that's being done to them. Ferguson, for instance, okay?
Right.
Don't you think if they were actually willing to listen to the voice of the people, everything about what was happening there would have immediately changed?
Yeah, they have no
interest. That the people right there could have said, okay, that's it. We're done. You guys are all fired. We're going to hold a new election, and we're going to get people in here that understand these problems and are willing to fix them. Don't you think that would have happened? No.
Yeah.
Because
had...
the people already in power have no intention of relinquishing that power,
exactly.
except to someone else who is willing to maintain it in their absence. That's exactly the problem. We are no longer a country governed by the consent of the governed.
Right.
We are a country governed entirely by the apathy of the governed. Let me tell you something I learned about the word apathetic, which is how most Americans are these days. And I'm really disappointed that that affected Texans the way it has, because we were always known as the leader in stuff like this. Now we're not even close to being a rudimentary follower. We're just there. We're snail sludge, okay?
Yeah.
Apathetic. If you take a really hard look at that word, you will find out that the word apathetic is 89% pathetic.
Right.
Yeah. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what apathy is, people. It's being pathetic.
Yes.
So if we don't change that mindset, we don't change what we're doing, we're done. This is stuff like this is the premise of the movie that we've got coming out. I'm going to be in a movie that's going to be released hopefully sometime in the first quarter of this year. And you can go to the website, see the trailer, and get notified of the release of the movie and everything. The website is grandscammovie.com. Grand, like a thousand, a million, a hundred, a million dollar, grand, okay? It's a grand piano. Grandscammovie.com. And there are many people that are in there, including Dave Champion. Dave Champion and I, he came to Texas, and we sat down and did a shoot together, having a discussion over some of these issues and things. I've known Dave on Facebook and on the phone. I've talked to him numerous times through the years, and we know each other in that respect, but this was the first time I'd ever got to actually meet him in person. And he really is a great guy. And believes in what he does, just like I hope from what you're hearing from me that you understand that I believe in what I do and why I do it.
Oh, I have no doubt.
I chose this. I'm sorry.
I've been listening to you for, shoot, the whole time you've been on Rule of Law, so 5 years.
Yeah, I chose this area of law because this is the area that most people will have contact with at least once, and if not multiple times in their lives.
Right.
This is the area where you're going to get the best and cheapest legal education you're ever going to be able to get. You're not going to have to spend $100,000 like that moron attorney to get a degree that means nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, when you tell me that I can't read the law and understand it, what you're telling me is you've written an unconstitutional law, period. Because every law is required to be understood by the average man of reasonable intelligence. Not just attorneys, not just judges, not just politicians. Because if that were true, then they rule by ignorance.
Yeah, and deception.
They rule the people through writing laws that the people are too ignorant to understand. How's that for pathetic?
Which amounts to deception. Yeah.
Exactly. So when they write a law that they're telling you that you can't possibly understand and interpret, they're telling you that they've written an unconstitutional law. The other adverse side to that coin for them is this. They say that you have a duty to know the law and to comply with it. So how can they possibly make an argument in the same damn breath that you cannot possibly understand it and make an argument relevant to it?
Exactly.
That's completely idiotic. Yet that is exactly what attorneys do, hence the idiotic part.
Yeah, it's a shell game.
Yeah, they believe that that law degree gives them some special ability and intellect above the normal person, and it does not. Absolutely does not. I have yet to find an attorney on any subject that I deal with that knows that statute better than me, that can make an argument that I cannot disprove. Not one. So much so, in fact, that I've actually had several come to me and ask me to help them with their ticket cases.
Right. You're familiar with Mark Stevens, right?
Yeah. And
he's
I like
his
Mark
analogy
Stevens, and he
of,
has
of,
a good idea. My problem with Mark Stevens is follow through and implementation. That's my only problem with Mark Stevens.
Yeah, I wasn't going there. I was just going to mention his analogy of the court being the court system being a cult. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's a lot of things. It's a prostitution ring. You name it. It's all kinds of things.
Yep.
I made a meme for Facebook the other day, and you can apply it to almost any governmental entity you like. This one was actually directed at the United States Congress, but you could point it at the United States Supreme Court, your state Supreme Court, your state criminal court, doesn't matter. It works the same way.
Yeah, any of them.
And the meme said this, "Welcome to the world's biggest whorehouse."
Right.
And at the bottom it says, "The only whorehouse in the world where even after the money changes hands, the whores are the only ones that aren't getting fucked." Okay? And that's true.
Yeah.
We're the ones that's getting rode hard and put up wet here. Not them. Because we don't know what they're doing and we don't know what to do about it.
Exactly.
Well, this movie, The Grand Scam, goes into an awful lot of details and information and solutions on this stuff.
Excellent. I'm looking
forward to it. If the movie's successful, there may be another project involving Dave Champion and myself dealing with the federal income tax. We'll put out a full-blown movie based upon Dave's book, Income Tax, Shattering the Myth.
Excellent.
And
that sounds awesome, yeah.
It'll be done in a way that not many other documentaries, if any, have ever been done. Hopefully it'll be a lot more interactive from the perception of the viewer in the way that we're going to try to do that one. The Grand Scam is a lot like Freedom to Fascism and things like that, in that a lot of it is a bunch of people just sitting in a room discussing the law, the facts, and things like that,
right,
and everything. But we're not going down the same paths they went down in a lot of ways. So that's the good thing about it. It's not just another documentary.
Okay.
This one goes into a lot of areas that you haven't seen in these movies, and some that you have, but not all of them.
When did you say it was supposed to be coming out?
With any luck, it'll be out the first quarter of this year. It was actually supposed to be out before the election, but they decided they wanted to give it a longer-running shelf life for the people to look at, and so they took out all the stuff that we shot dealing with the elections, and we reshot some material, and they recut that, and now they're trying to get everything finished up and get it out there for distribution. They're talking about possibly releasing it direct to Netflix. Because that will give us the widest distribution platform in the world at the moment. It's bigger than Amazon. It's bigger than any of them. So it may actually go that route. We don't know for sure yet. But anyway, yeah, you can sign up at the website grandscammovie.com to get notification of the movie's release.
Yep, I've posted all your links in here. And we'll keep up to date on that. So,
okay.
Let's see. Did we have any other questions?
I don't know. Did you?
Eventually kill a man if he sets their playtime back too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to catch all the questions. If anybody has any questions, please repost them in the chat room, and I'll try to read them for Eddie.
Well,
what else can we go over?
If you're in the Austin area listening to this, or somewhere in Texas that you can commute pretty easy, I've got people in Dallas, Corpus Christi, Houston, all the way clear up to Waco, people, and Amarillo, people. I've had people come to my class, to Texas, to Austin specifically, to come to my class for one or two Sundays.
Right.
I have people from California. On my call-in show on Rule of Law Radio on Monday nights from 8 to 10, I get calls from all over the globe. I've helped people in Australia. I helped a woman in England sue the police department in her town for false arrest and false imprisonment. Successfully, she won 7,500 British pounds from them.
Nice.
Okay, that's 1.5 times the American dollar. Okay, so she got over 10,000 American dollars from these guys,
right,
because they falsely arrested her on trumped up drug charges. They planted drugs on her and then tried to arrest her.
Damn.
And I helped her by telling her, okay, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And these are the things you're going to have. Those things are universal, people. They're what's required in any court, in any country, to prove or disprove certain facts. She followed the information I gave her. She did what I told her. I had to learn a little bit of English procedure, but she did it. She beat them. It's not impossible. You
right.
just
That's
have to
one
learn
of the reasons
to play
I wanted
the
to have
game
you on
better
is because
than them.
You're one of the few I know that has had successes, not just one or two, but consistent.
Yeah, I'm approaching the monetary threshold of depriving the city of Austin of over $1 million in traffic fines.
Nice. That's just with all the people you've helped.
Yeah.
Not talking about you suing them directly, just all the people you've helped avoid paying the city.
People that go in, do their cases, and come out and say, I won. The money the state and the city did not manage to get their hands on is approaching $1 million.
Okay, we have a few questions now. Sock Puppet is asking, can Eddie explain ruling class as it exists in the courtrooms?
Well, I don't know what you mean by ruling class. In my opinion, there is no ruling class. What you're talking about is, do you fit in and know how to play or not? It's kind of like sitting around a poker table at a high-stakes game and all you want to be is an observer rather than a player.
Right.
At a poker table, are there any elite there may be elite players, yes, but no one enters that game as anyone else's financial superior or ability superior until the game is finished.
Right.
Because the old champion could get beat, right? And then there's a new champion, and so on and so forth. There is no ruling class in this. That thought process needs to stop. Because when you do that, you are putting you or someone else below the level of operation that's in existence. And that creates a false sense of security or deprivation one way or the other.
A false belief.
You go into this as equals. Always look at it that way. And if you're smart and you're well studied, you're articulate, and you can do this properly, you're actually superior in your own mind and confidence because you actually know the law better than they do. You actually know the procedures they're required to follow better than they do.
Yeah, you know their own rules and can hold their feet
exactly.
to the fire.
And when a judge says, I'm going to do this, and you go, objection. You cannot do that under Rule 4.13 of the Code of Criminal Procedure. You are required to do A, B, and C. If you fail to do A, B, and C, I move for your immediate disqualification. You want to see a judge sit back and take a crap in their chair? That'll do it.
Yep. Okay, next question. Ask Eddie to explain the difference between a state title and a certificate of origin.
Okay, an MSO, Manufacturer Statement of Origin, or an MCO, Manufacturer Certificate of Origin. Is that
right.
what you're asking about?
Yes.
Okay. The title to a car is a negotiable instrument. Says so right in the Commerce Code. Titles to automobiles are negotiable instruments. Now think about that.
Yeah.
What do we use a title for an automobile for? To transfer legal ownership, not equity ownership, legal ownership, because that is the only thing that instrument is capable of transferring according to the law itself. Legal title to something is not the same as equitable title to something. Legal title means you have the right of use and the right of possession. It's like leasing a car. You have the right to have the car in your possession. You have the right to use the car as you see fit, but you can't sell that leased car. You can't burn that leased car to the ground. You can't give it away. It's not really yours. Okay? That's what the title from the state means, but not for the way you're thinking. I can hear the gears grinding. Let me correct you on something here. The purpose of the legal instrument called a title was when you used a loan to purchase the car. Because if you owe someone else for that property does not truly belong to you until what you owe is paid, correct?
Right.
The title is there to record the lien that exists due to that loan.
So it's akin to a mortgage
document. And thus protect the rights of the loaning party, the bank, for instance. You go to the bank, you borrow money to get a car, and you go buy the car. Okay? You and the bank. You have legal title to the car, the right of use and possession, but the bank actually owns it.
Right.
Until you pay them off. Okay? That title is there to record that lien and protect the interest of both you and the bank. It is the exact same thing as a mortgage on a house.
Exactly what
the
I
difference
was
here
saying.
Is this. Once a mortgage is paid, what are they required to do with the mortgage? They were, under law, originally required, once the last payment was made, the mortgage had to be signed off on and given to the homeowner.
Right.
Who then held a mortgage burning party. And he
exactly.
threw the damn thing in the fire. Why? Because that was the only piece of paper that anyone could use to gain adverse possession to that property by saying that he never paid the note. That mortgage is the significant evidence of an existing note on a piece of property.
Right.
That mortgage disappears, no more note. No one can produce anything in court that says you owe them for that property. That's exactly what the title does to your car. Period.
Right.
What the state was supposed to do was to return to you the original MSO or MCO that they were sent by the dealership if you bought the car new. When that loan was paid off at the bank, the state was required to signify the release of that lien by signing off on that title paperwork and returning the MCO or MSO to you as the equity owner.
But that never happened.
But they don't do that. What they do now is they take those certificates when they're sent to them by the dealer and they shred them.
Yep.
They are destroying the original ownership documents. After they shred them, they burn them so they can't be put back together again. And if you think that's funny, you haven't been to Korea. I have. In Korea, we can't just shred government documents over there. After they're shredded, we have to go out to the burn area and burn them in barrels. We have to rotate them around by hand and burn them. The reason for that is because they found out way back when that when they shredded their documents, stuffed them into bags and threw them out, the Koreans were coming along and picking them up. They would then literally take them to warehouses full of people whose entire job was to sit there and go through that bag and strip by strip reassemble
that
document.
Puzzle back together, yeah.
Can you imagine that as a job?
Yeah.
They were doing it.
So,
okay.
Follow up to that question, Stock Puppet wants to know, why aren't people given the certificate of origin if you go in and buy the car outright, pay cash for it or whatever?
Yeah, the thing, you always demand the certificate of title if you're paying cash for the car. The problem is you pay cash for a car these days, you're going to have the IRS knocking on your doorstep. You're going to have the DEA knocking on your doorstep. Why? Where'd you get that much cash? We don't have anything in our record showing you got that kind of cash. Where'd you get it? Must be drugs. Must be tax evasion. Bank on it. The system's been set up to make you a victim at every opportunity.
Exactly.
And they're going to use it if they can.
They cover it.
But in relation to some of what we're asking here, no, the state does not own the car. The state was never a party to the loan. The state was never a party to the agreement. The state, as its legal duty requires to protect the rights and property of the people, is an intermediary that's there to make sure that the contract is honored by both parties. But what the state is now doing is interfering illegally in the completion of that contract, in its fulfillment, by not providing you with the proper documentation and releasing the significant lien instrument in the form of the title.
So
basically, it's tortious interference with a contract is what the state is doing.
Okay. Grim wants to know what you know about the weed laws and such. Let me find where he said it.
Technically speaking, I don't know a whole lot about them other than this. In Texas, and every variance of law here, they are not allowed to do the things they're doing. We know this, of course, but understand this. There are five species of the plant that we know as hemp. Only one of them contains THC. Only one. That is the only one that by law is outlawed. Okay? But they use that law to cover any of those species. The problem is there is case law dating way back there at the Supreme Court level that says very clearly the government cannot outlaw that which is natural. They don't own it. They have no right to it. They cannot outlaw something that nature itself creates. If that were true, why don't they pass a bill outlawing tornadoes so property damage doesn't occur? Why don't they make a bill making hurricanes illegal so that no more Louisiana dams and levees get broke? Because they can't legislate nature. The problem is people want to choose a side of the fence and make an argument about something that should not be argued over in the first place. We go back to the issue of individual rights. If you're sitting there smoking a joint and the only person you're exposing to the inhale factor is you, what do I care? Now, if you're going to sit there and blow it in my face when I do not wish to partake and participate, that's another matter. I can move. You can move. We don't have to do it that way. But for the state to come in and say, nobody can have it, that's none of the state's business.
Exactly.
But again, why? First off, you also have to understand the real reason why it was outlawed. It had absolutely nothing to do with the THC. Absolutely nothing.
No, it had to do with cotton farmers.
No, not just cotton farmers. Hemp can produce more natural products in greater quantities than several forms of product.
Cotton farmers were the main driving force.
Petroleum.
Yeah.
Steel.
Yeah.
Lumber. Hemp can compete with all of them on a much larger scale at a much cheaper cost and be much more beneficial to the planet.
Exactly.
Hence, you can't have it because it deprives those with those industries of profit. Now we're back to that issue of the Supreme Court saying your country is ruled by corporations because they have the money to buy your politicians. Welcome to the world of America and the globe as a whole.
And they all suck. I had to get that in there. So, the question.
And yes, I see a thing up here. Do they do that with planes? I'm assuming this means in relation to the certificate of title. Yes, they do. If you allow them to say the plane is used for transportation, then it goes through exactly the same process. Anything bought with a loan goes through this process, especially if it's something that they can issue a title for. But once that loan is paid and the contract fulfilled, they are required to provide you with evidence that that loan no longer exists, that impediment to the property no longer exists, and you are now the equity rather than the legal owner. The equity owner has all rights to every form of disposition of the property, whether it be to sell it, trade it, give it away, or destroy it, or to make regular use of it. That's what an equity owner has versus a legal owner. Okay, and that's the part they don't want you to ever understand anymore. They want you to always assume you're only the legal owner because that's what gives them the control.
Yep, same thing with real property.
Real property is commercial. Real property is commercial. Private property is equity property.
Well, I mean, specifically land and...
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's property. What they're trying to get you to buy into when they call your car a motor vehicle. It's not a motor vehicle. The only time your car can ever be a motor vehicle is if you are acting in the legal capacity of a carrier, operator, or driver, and you are using that automobile for the purpose of engaging in transportation. That is the only legal avenue through which it can become a motor vehicle. It is not one simply by declaration. It is one by use. And application only.
Right.
So calling your property, your equity, your private property, real property is buying into that exact same scheme from a land perspective.
It's a definition.
Real property is commercial use property. Period.
Okay.
It's got nothing to do with private property.
switching back to the marijuana thing, I know you don't smoke pot, but if you were to smoke pot and get caught, what would your defense outline, what your defensive approach would be?
Consumption. That's the only thing the law applies to. The selling and distribution. That's it. Selling and distribution. Not use. Mere possession is not an offense, no matter what they're trying to tell you.
Okay.
They have to prove that you had some intent and purpose to sell or distribute for money or transport for money that material. But for private use, that's never been illegal. And the whole, it goes to doing it just like cigarettes. It's illegal to sell cigarettes without a tax stamp to prove that the tax on the tobacco has been paid. That's exactly what they're doing with marijuana. Except they want to control the revenue of that business. It is once again a completely unconstitutional method of giving the government a monopoly control of an industry, something government should never have. No state constitution in existence does the very most important thing it could ever do, provide the people with usable teeth to protect their rights against their government. What I mean by that is this. Our ability to control our government is not limited to the ability to cast a vote. Not supposed to be, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
No constitution specifically criminalizes any conduct of any public servant for a violation of any provision of that constitution, does it?
Not that I know of.
No constitution says any public servant who violates a provision of this constitution may be prosecuted and must be prosecuted criminally by the state and reparations paid to those harmed by the actions of the individual being prosecuted. Okay? If that was written into a state constitution, what do you think they would be doing today with all this police bullshit, all this laws they're trying to pass that allow these intrusions, all these rulings the courts are making that deprive the people of rights in favor of government power if the Constitution said you have the right to shoot every public servant right between the eyes who violates you and your property in an unconstitutional, unlawful manner? If that was written directly in the Constitution, do you think any of this crap would be happening? Hell no, it wouldn't be happening.
Of course not.
But the problem is, how do you amend the Constitution to get something like that in there? Because guess who's the only one voting on the Constitution? Sure as hell ain't you and me. Because we're not the ones that are required under the Texas Constitution to bring it up for public review. The legislature has to do it. So imagine, the legislature is going to pass a bill that says, if I screw up in my job as a legislature, these guys can take me out and hang me. I don't want to pass that bill.
Yeah, that reminds me of the story about how the bar thing got passed by the legislature, by a bunch of lawyers. I think Randy talks about that. That when the bar thing got passed originally.
Well, the Bar Association of every state is absolutely unconstitutional as a monopoly.
Exactly.
Every state bars monopolies from existing. Now, it does not make exceptions for state-run monopolies. Doesn't make any. Yet the state of Texas has three.
Yeah.
Alcohol and tobacco, lottery, and the practice of law. They have three unconstitutional monopolies in operation as we speak. And what are we doing about it? Nothing. Why? Because we like our rub-off tickets. We like our Powerball.
Yep.
Now, I don't know why, but there we are, okay? And for those people out there that are sports fanatics, there is better use of your time, believe me. Now, I love to play sports, but I absolutely loathe the idea of sitting and watching them. I can't watch somebody else do the things that I love to do myself. It just irks me to no end.
Right.
Even when I was playing in the game, if I was sitting on the bench rather than on the field, I could not just sit and watch for the sake of watching.
Right.
I had to find some way to occupy my mind about what was going on rather than the game itself because I can't stand to watch. Well, folks, right now, the things I'm talking about, that's all you're doing. You are spectating. just like you are in your football, your basketball, your baseball, or whatever else it is you watch and waste your time on, when you should be learning why your government is screwing you without lube. And what to do about it. You're exactly. Stuck in a prison cell with a 300-pound behemoth that is sitting there bending you over, and you have no clue how to fight back. And what's worse is you're more interested in the TV in the lobby while you're getting butt pounded than what to do about it. Congratulations. Okay?
I hear you.
That is the apathetic right there in full action. Yeah,
sure,
somebody brought
is.
Up Charlie Sprinkle. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Charlie Sprinkle and I were friends. Charlie Sprinkle was in California, and he actually sued Ronald and Nancy Reagan for interfering with his right to locomotion in the state of California. And they cut a deal with him. They didn't fix the law so that they would be well known to everybody, but he was the only one that knew what the hell was going on enough to do something about it, and they cut a deal privately with him that if he would stop coming after them in the lawsuits he had filed, they would leave him alone. And it worked. You know what he did? He sued Reagan for criminal application of the laws when he was governor of California, and he sued Nancy for laundering Reagan's money that he earned as governor, because his money was being earned through a criminal enterprise known as misapplication of law by government.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Charlie was a smart guy. No problems with Charlie. And you'd never know it by looking at him or talking to him, because he was as country as I am.
Yeah,
but
I
the
remember.
Fact is, don't let that fool you. People come up to me. I used to, when I was living in Colorado, I used to go play pool at this dance hall. And I'd be in there playing pool, and these girls would come up and talk to me. And, of course, I sound like Jethro Bodine most of the time, rather than when I'm talking about stuff like this. And they were actually surprised when I would tell them what I did for a living, which at that time was I'm a computer consultant and programmer. You are? I would have never thought that. Yeah, because you're judging me by how I sound and how I appear. You don't know me, okay? And that's the mistake that these attorneys and public officials get into when I walk into their courtroom and they start pulling the same crap on me that they pull on everybody else. I am not that gullible moron that walked in here yesterday. I am not the guy you're going to pull this on and get away with it. I am not the guy that's going to sit peacefully by and let you bend me over anything. It's like I tell TSA at the airport, anything you touch me with on your person that you, that is organic, you're not getting back. Okay? I have never had TSA touch me going through an airport. Not once. And I don't go through the scanners. They check my luggage, and that's it. But I tell them right up front, you touch me with any part of your anatomy, you're not getting it back.
Right.
Because they have no authority to touch you. None. Never have had.
No. I don't even remember the last time I flew anyway. I just avoid those places.
Well, this is one of the reasons why several years ago when I was working as a computer consultant at Koch Industries in Wichita, Kansas, I would spend 3 or 4 hours every day out at the airport taking flying lessons. I don't need to go through TSA. I can get there on my own.
Right.
And no, I do not have a pilot's license. You know why? Because only those flying for commercial purposes have to get the license.
Exactly.
You ever think about that, people? You do not need a pilot's license to fly a damned airplane unless you're doing it for commercial purposes.
Exactly. Stop asking for permission to do things you already have a right to do.
Yeah. And that's a simple fact. The state cannot license aviation. The federal government does. And the federal government rules and guidelines are very, very clear. You're free to go to an airport, and if you've qualified to solo an airplane, you can rent a plane and go fly and build up your solo hours as long and as often as you want.
Right.
Nothing they can do about it. You don't need a license to go take lessons. You don't need a license to do your solo flights. You don't need a license to do your check rides. You don't need any of that. So why would you need it after the fact? Why? The only reason to even take a check ride is to try to get the license.
Yeah.
I don't care if somebody else is telling me I'm certified on a twin engine versus a single engine. Why would I care? I've got the damn plane in the air safely. I can put it back on the ground safely, and I know how to fly it safely. Why do I need this guy telling me what I'm doing? I've already learned that. That's how we got here. I'm the one who's got the yoke in his hands, not this guy. Oh, well, I need you to roll to a 180 and come out flat on a 240-degree heading. Okay. I can do that without him. Thank you very much. If that's what I want to do. But
right.
Why would I do it?
I'm with you 100% on that. And everything else.
I like this. What exactly is dorktacular?
That's a little thing we got going on. It's called the Dork Table. It's another show. One comes on right before us. Is that
supposed to be a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, it's a good thing to them. Oh, there was one more question before we end the show here. Somebody asked if you did an audio series on contracts via Great Courses.
Not me.
Not you. Okay. Let's see if there's anything else we need to ask before we wrap it up. Just comments and stuff. Okay, yeah, it was somebody else who actually is from Austin. Anyways.
Yeah, now I'm going to leave you with one last thought about public servants and attorneys. There is absolutely nothing wrong with any of these people that a tall tree and a short rope can't fix. Keep that in mind.
I think you'll get full agreement with most people here. Yeah, this is a pretty well-informed crowd here. Looks good. Well, I'd like to thank you for coming on today. Invite you back anytime you'd like to come.
Sure. And, well, thanks for the invite.
Been a couple of hours
said, if you're on Facebook, you can look me up. TAO space LAUW is my personal account. You can also go to www.logosradionetwork.com, and you can listen to the live streaming of the shows on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. My show is only on Mondays from 8 to 10 p.m., but there's lots of good shows and information on our network. So if you aren't somebody that's listening to it, you may want to start. I've also been on InfoWars quite a few times, and I'm the only guest that I know of on Alex Jones's InfoWars that has ever been given a platform uninterrupted by anyone.
Right.
I've done a 2.5-hour video series there on licensing and the transportation code. I've done all kinds of interviews on particular aspects of law, and so on and so forth. In fact, the very first time I ever met Alex in person was down at the state capitol. And he actually came to me. I didn't go up to him. He came to me and said, "You're Eddie Craig, right?" I'm going, "Yeah." And he's going, "Yeah, we're on the same network, and I listen to your show all the time." And I'm kind of like, "Well, Alex Jones listens to my show on purpose." And he's going, "Yes, I do." I'm going, "All right. That's cool."
Right. I think I asked you this the other day, but have you heard of Hal Anthony? He does the Behind the Woodshed broadcast. He was on Oracle for a while. He's on our network now.
The name sounds somewhat familiar.
The guys in the chat room, I don't know if you saw, but they're saying you and Hal would make a good pair. So I'm going to ask you now, would you like to come back on sometime with Hal and let you guys hash some things out? He does a lot of work on the miners' rights and things like that, so... But he's very along the same lines as you as far as read the damn directions, basically. So I'd like to have both of you guys in on a show.
Yeah, my old ag teacher used to say that when all else fails, read the damned instructions.
Exactly. So, there you go. I'd like to have you and Hal on sometime. Maybe get you guys together. Maybe y'all can work on some things together, because I know y'all share the same frustrations with people not paying attention or listening or understanding. So, definitely like to do that sometime.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on, Eddie. It's been a great time for me. I think everybody has enjoyed it, and we look forward to doing it again.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All righty. You have a great day. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. This has been the debut edition of the Smoke and Mirror Show on January 7th, 2017. Thanks for listening.